Namaste Vasudevaya.
Om
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today, even more nectar coming, flowing from the lotus mouth of Shukadeva Goswami. Canto 10, chapter 18, text number 13. Kavachit Nrityatsu Cha Anyeshu Gayakau Vadakau Svayam Sangsham Statu Maharaja Sadhu
Sadhu Iti
Vadinau Kavachin Rijatsu Chanyeshu Gayakau Vadakau Svayam Sa Shang Satur Maharaja Sadhu Savitti Vadinau Kavachit. Sometimes, Nrityatsu, while they were dancing, Cha, and Anyeshu, others, Gayakau, the two of them, Krishna, the Krishna and Balaram, singing, Vadakau, both playing musical instruments. Svayam, themselves. Sang Shang Shatu, they praised. Maharaja, O great king. Sadhu Sadhu Iti. Very good, very good. Adino, speaking. Translation. While the other boys were dancing, O King, Krishna and Balaram would sometimes accompany them with song and instrumental music. And sometimes the two lords would praise the boys, saying, very good, very good. There's no purport, so we'll continue on to text number 14. Kavachit bilvai kvachit kumbhai kvachama loka mushtibi aprishya netra bandhadhyai kvachin mriga kakegaya. Sometimes the cowherd boys would play with bilva or kumbha fruits, and sometimes with handfuls of ama loka fruits. At other times they would play the games of trying to touch one another, or of trying to identify somebody while one is blindfolded. And sometimes they would imitate animals and birds. Purport. Srila Sanatan Goswami explains that the word adhyayi, by other such sports, indicates such games as chasing one another and building bridges. Another pastime would occur at noon while Lord Krishna was taking rest. Nearby, the young cowherd girls would be passing by singing, and Krishna's boyfriends would pretend to inquire from them about the price of milk. Then the boys would steal yogurt and other items from them and run away. Krishna, Balaram, and their friends would also play games in which they would cross the river in boats. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur further explains that the boys would play with fruits by throwing a few in the air and then throwing others to try to hit them. The word netra bhanda indicates a game in which one boy would approach a blindfolded boy from behind and place his palms over the blindfolded boy's eyes. then simply by the feel of his palms, the blindfolded boy would have to guess who the other boy was. In all such games, the boys would put up stakes for the winner, such as flutes or walking sticks. Sometimes the boys would imitate the various fighting methods of the forest animals, and at other times they would chirp like birds. Om Agyana Timuram Dashaganjana Shakaya Chakshurud Militam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Nama. So, if we advertised that we were giving discourse here on the topmost knowledge of spiritual enlightenment, self-realization, and someone saw the poster and they said, yes, I would like to know the topmost knowledge, and they walk in to the temple room just as we were talking about cowherd boys imitating birds, they would wonder, what in the world is going on? I thought this was going to be a discourse on the ultimate spiritual enlightenment, the highest knowledge, and now you're talking about cowherd boys imitating birds? So, are we mad? Or is this indeed the highest knowledge? Krishna says it is the highest knowledge. Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam Pavitramita Bhutam. Of course, that's the Bhagavad Gita, but Bhagavad Gita is simply the doorway into the Srimad Bhagavatam, actually. So, how is it that meditating on cowherd boys chirping like birds, that we are indeed entering the realm of the ultimate knowledge? This is the question. How is that? How is it possible? It may be entertaining to watch cowherd boys chirp like birds. Actually, people pay money, you know, to go to a nightclub and hear a man who can bark like a dog. Even though the dogs are barking in the street, you can hear a dog barking for free. If they hear that a man is able to bark like a dog, then they will pay money. Oh, he barks just like a dog. Very good. Sadhu, sadhu. Very good, very good. So, what is this phenomenon? Actually, the original propensities all are there in the spiritual world. Just like Prabhupada explains, why do the young boys like to play the flutes? Especially back, it's still going on, but especially in the 60s, it was really true. I know Tamal Krishna Goswami, he was playing the flute. Vishnu Jan Maharaj used to play the flute, you see, before they joined the movement. So many young boys, back in the 60s especially, playing flutes. Prabhupada said this because Krishna is playing the flute, therefore that propensity has come also to them. So here also we see there's so many propensities in the spiritual world, and they become pervertedly reflected here. So the purpose of meditating on these wonderful divine pastimes is that they help us to reconnect with our original spiritual natures. Lila Smaranam, to meditate on the transcendental pastimes of the Lord, help us to reconnect, as we were discussing previously. Even in this mundane world, Hawaiian Airlines was giving the Texans a sample of Hawaii there in the Hawaii in the Houston airport to induce them to purchase their tickets on Hawaiian Airlines to come to Honolulu. So Krishna is doing this. He gives detailed knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita, throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, via the mouths of his devotees. He is giving detailed knowledge of this material existence, how we are entangled here, how we can become free from it, etc., etc. But then here in the 10th kata, we are seeing the nectar of the spiritual world, which was manifested 5,000 years ago in Sri Vrindavan Dham. So by appreciating these pastimes, and Prabhupada used to do that, he would, especially in Los Angeles, he would very much like, he would sit in the garden there and have the devotees read Krishna book. He very much liked to sit and hear Krishna book. Especially he liked Krishna killing the demons. He very much liked that, those pastimes. So this is very, very important part of our spiritual lives, to appreciate these divine pastimes of Krishna. If someone is suffering from amnesia, there is a method of how to revive their remembrance of who they are. You allow them, or you place them in the contact of those things which remind them of who they actually are. Their associates, their place of residence, the various places where they go and do things, you see. You can show them their old high school yearbook, their scrapbook, so many things that connect them with who they actually are. And gradually, by associating with those things connected with their actual identity, then it begins to come back, the remembrance of who they are. So right now, we are suffering from amnesia. Very bad case of amnesia. For millions of lifetimes, we've forgotten who we are. We're thinking, not really knowing who we are, we just jump to some identity. Well, I think I'm a tree, I think I'm a dog, I think I'm a demigod, because I had this body here. Of a demigod, of a tree or dog, so it must be me. But that's not at all the fact. We're not this body. No, they aren't. In spite of all of our thinking, feeling, and willing and acting to the contrary, we're not these bodies. Not at all. The person within that body, he is the same. But yet the body is changing. We can remember when we were little children, we were doing this and that, so many different things. But where are those chemicals now that made up that body? They're long gone. Those chemicals are finished. Even the body you have right now is not exactly the same body you had when you walked into this temple room a few minutes ago. The chemicals are constantly changing. It's like a river. The molecules, water molecules, are flowing through that riverbed. In the U.S., they have the Mississippi River. It's the Ohio and the Missouri feed into it, and it dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. So the water that today we stand on the bank of the Mississippi and we say, oh, this is Mississippi River water. Take it in our hand. But yesterday, those same molecules, they were Missouri River or Ohio River. Now it's a blend. They blended together. Now we call it Mississippi. You see? And next week, those same water molecules, they'll be sitting, and now we'll say, this is Gulf of Mexico water. You see? The water molecules are the same, but they're being described differently, according to where they are. Mississippi, Ohio, Missouri, Gulf of Mexico. So the material elements are there, and they are simply going here and there. And we are thinking, well, this is me, this is you, this is him, this is her. But no. The actual self is beyond this flow of chemicals. When we inhale chemicals are coming in, and we exhale they're going out, and we eat the chemicals are coming, we go to the toilet room, they're coming out. It's a flow of chemicals. Constantly. What I'm making me right now, what is me, some chemicals, but those exact chemicals that I thought were me, tomorrow they may be you. Because I inhaled and you, I exhaled and you inhaled. So there's some chemicals switching around there. You see? So the actual self is beyond these chemicals. We can perceive that we remember experiences we had when the chemicals of the body were completely different. So what enables us to remember those childhood experiences we had? You see? What enables us to remember that? That is the actual Atma, the self, the non-material self, sitting there. One man just wrote to me that how you can say the self is situated beyond the body when some chemicals can be put into the brain and it affects your consciousness. So that, you know, he's thinking the self has to be material. But this is only because we've invested so much of our consciousness in the body that we are affected by the changes of the bodily or psychophysical situation affects our consciousness, not because we are the psychophysical situation, but because we've identified with it. We invested so much energy in the psychophysical nature, meant the gross and subtle material natures. A good example of this, some man, he's out all Sunday afternoon, you know, he washes his car, he's polishing it, just making it look beautiful. And then he goes for a drive in the park, and he pulls out to a stop sign, and some spaced out person behind him crashes into the back of his car, and he jumps out, "You hit me! You hit me!" Did you hit him? No. And we also have the experience, we're driving down the highway, you know, we see the little needle goes to E, and we go, "Oh my goodness, I'm out of gas." You see? Was he hit? No. Are you out of gas? No. You're not out of gas. But because we are investing so much of our consciousness in that body or in that automobile, you see, we are thinking, "I, me." You see? So in this way, we are affected by things that happen to the body, things that happen to the brain, the mind also, which is, the brain is simply a gross instrument utilized by the mind. Not the brain and the mind are separate. The mind is subtle, the brain is gross. So because we invested so much of our consciousness in the mental plane and in the gross physical plane, we think, "This is me." And this is a cause of great, great difficulty and problems for us. Because the fact is, no matter what arrangement you may make in this world, you cannot make a situation devoid of misery. It's not possible. This material world is miserable by nature. We are born in misery. In fact, I was literally born in misery. St. Louis, misery. St. Louis, Missouri. It's a miserable place. Misery. So anyway, we have to get out of this miserable condition. We have to understand how it is that I'm not this body. We have to be able to intelligently, philosophically analyze from our own experience and see that I'm actually not this material body. And since we have a sense of identity, there's something there. The my bodies will say, "Well, you're not the body, and you're not And you're not really, you don't really exist as an individual also. And the Buddhists will say, well, nothing is real. The body isn't real, the self isn't real, nothing is real. Of course, then we could ask them, if you say nothing is real, then your philosophy also is not real. So I reject it, because it's, according to you, your philosophy is unreal. So why should I accept something that's unreal? It's an easy way to defeat Buddhism, voidism. It cancels itself out. You see? So, positive reality, they say that there is no absolute truth. You see? So we have to ask them, my dear sir, are you absolutely sure? You cannot be absolutely sure that there's no absolute truth, because you're contradicting yourself. So the negation of absolute truth is impossible. Therefore, there must be absolute truth by the elimination of its non-existence. Logically, you see, there must be absolute truth. It has to be. There cannot not be the absolute truth. There has to be absolute truth. And this human life is meant to understand what is that absolute truth. The tato brahma jigyasa. What is the absolute truth? One must ask that question. If you do not ask what is the absolute truth, then I'm sorry to say, according to Vedic wisdom, you're simply an animal, that's all. You're simply an animal. Dog, hog, camel, ass, that's all. Simply an animal. So, they would like to be like animals. That is the modern day society. But some people aren't satisfied being animals, because they can reason and they can see that what is the use of all this endeavor if all I'm going to do is get sick, get old and die? What is the use of all this endeavor? Shramayavi kevalam. It's a useless waste of time. The struggle, 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 struggle. You see, getting up there every Monday morning, getting out there in the traffic, you know, all that hard work to get to the job and please the boss and work hour after hour after hour after hour. For what purpose? To make the bank rich. A slave. What's the point of it? An intelligent person will reason. What is the purpose of all this endeavor? If all I'm going to get is, you know, a few years of painful retirement, after my body is totally worn out and useless and I can't do anything anymore, I can't enjoy my senses anymore, then they let me retire. You see? Until I just rot away. You see? And then he put in a grave. You know, 6 feet under. They get flowers on your grave every year until they forget about you. Whoopee. No thanks. I'm not going to work hard for that. If I'm going to endeavor, I'm going to put my energy into something, it better be something that's worthwhile, that's tangible, that's substantial. That's it. So an intelligent person, you see, they come to these conclusions. They come to these conclusions. And they seek help. How I can actually realize what is the real purpose of my existence. Of course, some people say, well, that's all there really is. There's nothing more than, you know, a bleak, non-meaningful existence. So you just have to imagine some reality. You see, the existentialists will say like that. You just have to invent some reality to give, you know, a false sense of purpose. So at least you have something that motivates you. But sorry, I don't buy that. I want real purpose. They say there is no real purpose. But no, actually, there has to be real purpose. Here's the proof that there's real purpose. I have what is called, and we all have, we have something called thirst. We have a hankering for water. It's built into this material body. There's a hankering for water. Plants have it, animals have it, human beings have it. And the object water is also there. You see? It's real. Inside this cup, there's water. Melbourne water. There is water. So, thirst for water is there, and the object of satisfying that thirst, namely water, also exists. So, the thirst for genuine meaning and purpose to existence actually proves that there must be genuine purpose and meaning to existence. It proves it. This is a thirst for water proves the existence of water. The thirst for purpose proves that there is actual meaning and purpose to existence. Just because so many charlatans have come and given us bogus purposes and meanings to existence doesn't mean that there is not genuine purpose and meaning to existence. As I was leaving India, I was a little disappointed to find out when I wanted to change my rupees into US dollars that I had a counterfeit 500 rupee note that was valueless. You see? But what does a counterfeit note mean? That means it is an imitation of a genuine note. If there is not a genuine note that counterfeits can imitate, then counterfeits wouldn't be out there. So that there are so many counterfeit versions of reality, of purpose, of the meaning of existence floating around from so many bogus so-called philosophers doesn't mean there's no purpose or meaning. It means that somewhere there's a genuine purpose and a meaning and that these are simply the counterfeits. So, when one becomes very keen to actually know, understand, and realize what is the genuine meaning and purpose of existence, then what happens? There's a wonderful thing happen. You know who's been sitting there in the heart for millions of lifetimes, waiting for you. When is he going to wake up and realize that this material existence is not the end-all and be-all? You see? The Lord has been accompanying us for millions and millions of lifetimes, hankering for that day when we can come back to Him. So when we actually come to that realization, this is not satisfying to me. I can't get no satisfaction here. Well, that's a double negative. You know. Can't get any satisfaction here. When one comes to that realization, then that Lord in the heart, Chaitya Guru, He makes the arrangement that you can come in contact with the external Guru, you see. Just like throughout this wonderful book distribution that Prabhupada has given us, the most wonderful vehicle for saving the world situation, leading the world out of chaos, that we are doing as a society. And people are coming in contact with the bona fide spiritual master, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So that those souls who have actually come to that point where they're seeking, and it happens all the time. We hear again and again how people have gotten the book, and this is just what I was looking for, this is so wonderful. They were wondering, what is the answer? What is the answer? What is the answer? And they opened Prabhupada's books, and there it came. Boom. All the answers that they were dying to know. All the questions they had to have answered. Prabhupada is answering all of them. So So this is the kindness of Krishna. When the living being becomes very, very sincere to know that absolute truth, then that Chaita Guru brings him in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. So that the seed of bhakti can become planted in the heart. He will bring that soul into the contact of the Vaishnavas, who can then help and assist that devotee, that sincere seeker, I mean to say, become actually reinstated in his original identity as a devotee of the Lord. So this is the sublime, sublime process known as Bhakti Yoga. The ultimate yoga system. There's so many yoga systems. Hatha Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Raja Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga. So many yoga systems. They are simply rungs on the yoga ladder. The ultimate rung, Bhakti Yoga system. Yogi Nam Api Sarvesham Madgatena Tadatmana Shajhavam Vajate Yogam Soma Yukta Tumamata. Out of all yogis, out of all the yogis, the one who is most intimately united with me in yoga, you see, that yogi who is most intimately united with me in loving service, he is the topmost yogi. So we have gotten this very good opportunity by the grace of Srila Prabhupada and the grace of Srila Prabhupada's followers also. That is my own practical experience. I had the opportunity to meet Prabhupada. I wouldn't go because I was proud. Mayavad. It was only later on, after I had had the I've been kicked by the material energy again and again and again and again, and I finally figured out I wasn't God. And then, when I became very sincere, praying to the Lord to guide me, how I can become your perfect servant, then one of Prabhupada's disciples came to town and told me all about Prabhupada. And I could see what is the result of being a disciple of Prabhupada. I saw Vishnu Janaswami, how compassionate he was, how enlightened he was, how wise he was, how what a beautiful, beautiful person he was. Enlivening person to be with. It was just like unbelievable nectar just to be in his presence. Every minute was a festival with Vishnu Janmaharaj. At every minute it was a festival. Just being with him was like being in the middle of a huge festival, a bhakti fest, like you have a bhakti yoga fest. He was a walking, talking bhakti yoga fest. So I realized that this, yes, I will do what he did. I will become a disciple of Prabhupada. So I can become like he is. You see? So sometimes, even not meeting the spiritual master, just meeting the Vaishnavas who are following Srila Prabhupada, that will even have more of an impact. In my life, I refused to personally meet Prabhupada, but I met the followers of Prabhupada. You see, that convinced me I must become a follower of Prabhupada. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada, just as Srila Prabhupada is actually more potent for me through the form of his own follower, I lived 5 minutes away from where Prabhupada was giving a lecture that night in Berkeley. I mean, well, 5 blocks, maybe 10 minutes. I wouldn't go. Even though Prabhupada was there, I just wouldn't go. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada is more accessible. In my case, he was more accessible through his followers than directly. That's how I got my connection with him, was going through his follower. Of course, then, by mercy of Vishnu John, it was actually amazing. I mean, he wrote Prabhupada a letter. He said that I was doing nice service. This boy, Steve, he's doing very nice service in the temple. And I was amazed. How can he say that? I mean, I'm such a rascal. I'm lazy. I'm not cooperative. You know, I have so many bad qualities. And he told Prabhupada I was doing nice service. Boy, Vishnujan is really kind. He's so kind. to give Prabhupada such a nice report when I know really how, you know, what a rascal I really am. But Vishnujan Maharaj was so kind that he told Prabhupada I was doing nice service here in the temple and I should become, you know, he should initiate me. And Prabhupada did, on his word, he initiated me. So I got that opportunity to connect with this wonderful Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Prabhupada, Sampradaya, which is the most powerful manifestation of the mercy of God in this world. It is the most powerful. There are other Vaishnavas. We don't say it's the only one. But this is the Sampradaya that Lord Chaitanya appeared in. This is the Sampradaya in which the most powerful Acharya for spreading Krishna Bhakti all over the world appeared in. Of the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, this is there's more Bhakti Shakti flowing in this Sampradaya. So I got that good fortune of getting the best possible connection with Krishna. Best possible connection to get out of this rotten place and actually taste the true nectar, get a little sample, a few little drops of the unlimited bliss of the realm of immortality, the Paravyama, spiritual world. So, we can ask now if there's some questions. About this most sublime philosophy. Just 1 minute here. Get these. Yes, Prabhu.
You mentioned that a devotee seeks enlightenment, if you like. Due to frustration or whatever, they seek enlightenment. And we see that where devotees have a yearning or a hankering for spiritual emancipation. They meet a devotee, like Prabhupada. They get the opportunity, they're given the opportunity.
Yes, and one is actually seeking, then one is blessed by Krishna.
Yes, yes. Then they take the opportunity, but then they give it up.
That happens also.
So it seems that there's more than just getting the mercy of a pure devotee. And even more than just wanting to have it, it's, you know, it seems...
You have to properly capitalize on it also.
Yeah,
yeah. It's not like a... It's not like, well, you know, I accepted Jesus, so now I'm saved, I got initiated. So, no, you have to actually do the work. The opportunity comes. Now, as Krishna says, Manushanam Sahasadeshu Kashchad Yatari Siddhaye, that, you know, thousands of people, only out of thousands, only one will endeavor, and out of thousands who endeavor, only one will actually, you know, hardly even one will realize it. So many people will seek the absolute truth, and out of that, a small number will actually get the absolute truth, and out of that, a smaller number will actually fully realize and implement, you know, that realization of the absolute truth. It's a very, very rare number. So, if we find ourselves, and everyone in here in this room, we have all gotten the good fortune of becoming connected with this divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Now, it's up to us what we're going to do with that connection. Are we going to take it very, very seriously and we cultivate pure Krishna Bhakti, get all the anartas free, you know, free from the anartas? Are we, you know, strive to become completely, absolutely, totally absorbed with every thought, word and deed in all times, places and circumstances? Are we going to do that, or are we just going to kind of not take full advantage of this mercy we've gotten? Vishnujan Maharaj used to say, casual means casualty. So if we take it casually, you know, oh bloody, life goes on. What? La la, life goes on. kind of just kind of, well, Haribo. Are we going to intensely focus on, you know, becoming Krishna conscious, pure devotee? See, are we going to do everything we possibly can to seriously move up the pathway of spiritual advancement? Actually, you know, there's Kanishta Adhikari, Madhyam Adhikari, Uttam Adhikari. We should all be trying to achieve perfection. Complete, total spiritual perfection. I mean, we really don't have any choice if we want to taste the nectar, the full nectar. What is that verse? Sahai to kiya pratiyata yayatma supersedati. Unless your devotional service is completely free of any material motives and completely without any interruptions, you won't be fully satisfied. You see, if there's, to the degree that there's some material motive, to the degree that we kind of kick back every now and then and don't take it so seriously, to that degree we will not be satisfied. That's a fact. So the question is, do you want to be fully satisfied, partially satisfied, or totally dissatisfied? The three, what do you want? You want complete, total satisfaction, or do you just want partial satisfaction? Your choice, you see. Well, I'm happy with partial satisfaction because I don't want to work so hard to, you know, bring my mind under control, to bring my senses under control. All right, that's what you get. You're not going to be fully happy. I can guarantee you. If you're not serious to become a Goswami and bring your mind, senses completely under control, you're not going to be fully satisfied. There'll be so many disturbances in the mind. And you'll be stuck with them. Sorry. Many people come and they say, oh, bless me for this, bless me for that. It's not some cheap thing, yes, I bless you that you have this so automatic. No, you have to do the work. We have to work. And chanting Prabhupada said the tongue must work. People say, well, can I just chant silently? That's laziness. The tongue must work, Prabhupada said. So we have to work. We have to make the endeavor without any motive of material remuneration, just for the satisfaction of Guru and Krishna. That we have to do, that work. And that will open up the doors to transcendental realm if we do that. And then, as Ishapanishad says, the full blessings of immortality. There's nothing like it. It's there waiting. All we have to do is take it. Question?
I have so many questions, and Lord Krishna answers them straight away.
Speak up a bit.
I have so many questions, and Lord Krishna answers them straight away. You just open the book, and there it is.
Yeah.
Whatever book it is.
Yeah.
Took me to the Bhagavad Gita last night in regards to people in the mode of ignorance, compassion, leaving their bodies and where they go.
Mm-hmm.
Considering Krishna consciousness is the creme de la creme of spiritual realization.
It is what?
The creme de la creme, so to speak.
The cream of the cream.
The epitome.
Cream of the cream. Oh, yeah, this Australian's accent's a little different. Okay. Different versions of English language here. Okay. Yes, is there a question? Or do you just wanted to make a comment?
I was just hoping you might be able to answer this question in regards to Krishna consciousness being the perfection of spiritual realization. And that death is the summum bonum of that process. Considering...
Death is the summum bonum of self-realization?
Yes, well...
No.
If you succeed...
No. That's not true. Samabhanam of self-realization is to meet Krishna face to face, eye to eye. Death is just a doorstep and gets you into the spiritual kingdom. You just, as Dhruva Maharaj, he stepped, as he was leaving his body, actually death persona came rushing. For what purpose? He used death personified as a doorstep. He stepped on the head of death to get into the Vaikuntha airplane. Death is simply a stepping stool. You step on it to enter the spiritual world. That's not the summum bonum.
But in that, the process of death, in memorizing Krishna at the time of death, is so important. How is the best way to
be Krishna conscious at the time of death? Here's the best thing. My advice is this. Live every day as if it's your last. Why? Because one day it will be. Why every day? Every moment. I mean, my godbrother, Gaur Govinda Maharaj, he was preaching to some devotees, assembly of devotees. He left his body. So there's no position where you're immune. In any situation, one can leave one's body. So we have to think, I may die in 5 seconds from now. So let me focus myself on complete, total surrender to Guru and Krishna. Let me always be in that mood. So if you're always training yourself to be in the right state of consciousness, you're practicing. Moment by moment, you're practicing being ready for death. Then when it finally comes, no problem. In fact, the student who has studied well, who's worked hard all semester, doing all the homework, attending the lectures, taking good notes, reading the notes, doing the papers, he's actually enlivened by going to the final exam. Because he knows he's going to do very well, and he can show that he's done well. You see, he's worked hard all semester. In the Yashopanishad, the devotee is praying, "My dear Lord, please remember all that I have done for you." So the time of death is a chance for you to show Krishna that you've really seriously dedicated your life to him. Of course, I don't know if you're doing that.
Trying.
But that's what we have to do. We really have to seriously, seriously try to excel in every way, with every thought, with every word and every deed. That has to be the best possible thought, the best possible attitude, the best possible speech, and the best possible activities. We have to really always be trying to focus, laser focused our consciousness. As we explained the other day, a laser beam is so powerful it can burn through metal. So we have to focus our consciousness so intensely in Krishna consciousness, that we can burn through all the coverings of the material universe, which are very thick, very, very thick coverings of the material universe, extremely thick. Anyway, there was other question. Different people in different religions?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They all have their different beliefs.
Different beliefs, okay.
And everybody thinks that their...
My way is the only way. Yeah, okay, so what's the question?
Everybody believes that their scriptures or their beliefs are the only absolute...
Right.
So how can we, like, when we meet different religion persons,
yes,
we justify to them that only our beliefs are the absolute?
How can we, alright, that our beliefs are absolute? First of all, we don't have any beliefs. That's the first thing you have to understand. Not that, well, I've got my beliefs and you've got your beliefs. This is called relative knowledge. This isn't beliefs. You see, dehi nosmin yata dehe komaram jovanam jarata tade hantara brahtir dhirastatra nimuti. It's not a belief system that one changes from boyhood to youth to old age. That's not a belief. Well, in our religion, we believe that you go through boyhood, you know, from baby, boyhood, youthhood, old age. And what do you believe in your religion? No, this is a reality. This is a reality. The soul is changing bodies from boyhood to youth to old age. That change of body, I don't care what you believe in. You can believe in, you know, you can believe in Mickey Mouse. You can believe in Donald Duck. I don't care what you believe in. You're going to go through boyhood, youth, you know, and old age. That's a fact. Or girlhood, depending on gender. But we're going to go through these things. That's a fact. So there is a reality that exists. And that reality doesn't depend on whether you believe in it or not. So we're not talking about my beliefs and your beliefs here. The point is we have to understand there is a reality. And we have to understand, as we explained the other day, that reality ultimately is a supreme person. And that supreme person, out of his desire to expand his enjoyment unlimitedly, is emanating from himself millions and billions of living entities for the purpose of having a loving relationship with them. So religion is one, to reconnect with that supreme person. That is religion. If someone says, what religion do you belong to? I don't belong to any religion, because there's no such thing as many different religions. Religion is one, to reestablish your relationship with the supreme person.
That's what I'm saying. Somebody believes that Jesus is the supreme. Somebody says Jehovah's Witness.
God is. How many names are for this? Are there for the Son? There's millions, thousands of names for the Son. So we have no objection if you call the Supreme Lord Jehovah or Rama or Allah or Krishna. You see, Christ is also Jesus of the Christ, actually. Christ is Jesus is the first name and Christ is the last name, because his father's name is Christ. Actually, Christ is a name for God. It's etymologically the same. It's Krishna. Comes from the Greek word Christos, comes from the Sanskrit word Krista, which is another way of saying Krishna. So it's the same word. It's just coming out in a slightly different form. Christ, Krishna, the same word actually. So whether you want to say Christ, whether you want to say Allah, whether you want to say Jehovah, we don't mind. But just come to the standard point of being fully surrendered unto that original supreme person without any desire for material sense gratification. We don't care if you're following the path of Christianity, or Mohammedanism, Judaism. As long as you come to the point of pure love of God, then that is perfection. It's not that you have to join our organization. We don't say that. But we do say this. If you want to have knowledge, the most complete and in-depth knowledge of the science of reestablishing your loving relationship with that Supreme Person, you will find no writings like this anywhere in the world. The writings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I have a Baptist minister. I do this e-course thing. You know, I get people all over the world taking getting my emailings every day. I have a Baptist minister who also subscribes. You know what he does with my material? He uses it in his sermons, the Baptist Church. And Prabhupada's books also. He's gotten Prabhupada's books and he reads my things I send out. So he's so inspired by this Krishna consciousness philosophy that Prabhupada has introduced to the world, that he uses that in his Christian sermons. You know, a little bit undercover, obviously. Otherwise he'd lose his job. But this is not sectarian belief here. This is the original pure essence of religion before man invented this bogus idea that there are different religions. This is a false conception. There are not any different religions.
So where does a man go when he dies and he believes in some form of Allah or Christ instead of remembering Krishna and okay?
If a person is purely absorbed in love of God without any sense gratification, they fully surrender, whether they remember the name of Christ, Jehovah or Allah, they'll attain the supreme destination. But the question is, as Prabhupada pointed out, and my own experience also, Well, I personally find it very difficult, and this is why I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement. Why I joined Prabhupada's movement. Because even though I was actually studying the Bible for the purpose of achieving perfection, at that point I had actually come full circle. I'd come back to the Bible, my upbringing. I was studying Lord Jesus Christ. How can I become like Him? This is an enlightened being, spiritually enlightened being. How can I achieve this Christ consciousness? And I came to this verse where, you know, Christ says, "Father, not my will, but thy will be done." And I said, this is it. I have to do what God wants. So where was there a Christian who could teach me to do that? There was no such Christians. I had never met such a Christian who actually, that I was convinced, knew the will of God and could teach me what God wanted me to do and how I could do that. I didn't find a Christian, a Jew, anyone who could do that. The only person I found that could do that is Srila Prabhupada and his followers, you see. So even though theoretically anyone can be self-realized, you know, following, you know, chanting Allah, I haven't met them yet. It's a theoretical reality, but the practical reality is that Prabhupada is the one who's actually doing that. But in theory, one can. But the trouble is there's no good association. This Baptist minister, he's stuck there because he'd rather be a Hare Krishna preacher, but he's stuck there because of his livelihood. They're paying his bills. And we don't have any facility to say, oh, come on and join our movement, we'll give you a house and give you a salary. We don't do that here. So he's sitting there thinking, I'd rather be a Krishna consciousness preacher. Because he finds that atmosphere very stifling, that sectarian, closed-minded thing. They're doing all sinful activities and very proudly thinking that some of the scathing criticisms he's made of his own church are just amazing. Much stronger words than I've ever used, negative words about the hypocrisy. I mean, very deep understanding he has of the hypocrisy of the Christian church. Very deep understanding of their hypocrisy. I forget some ways he wrote me some of his scathing indictments of his own church, and it was amazing. I said, this is profound stuff, the way he's explaining it. I never thought of it in those terms. He explained it, so I forget how he worded it. If it comes to my mind, I'll bring it out. But this is the reality is that they're not doing it. They have the potential. Christ was a pure devotee. Prabhupada said that Muhammad also was a pure devotee. They had the potential was there, but it wasn't properly utilized, and it's not being properly utilized in the modern day world. But here, in this movement, the potential is also there, but it's being practically implemented by ISKCON. You see. So we advise, they don't have to become ISKCON devotees if they don't want to. Let them use Prabhupada's book to become perfect Christians, perfect Jews, and perfect Muslims. You see, if that's what they want.
They have other condemnations, like they don't stop eating meat. Only Prabhupada's
book. But the Bible clearly says, thou shalt not kill. They have simply twisted this for their own sense gratification. If you want to become a true follower of the Bible, you have to stop killing. The Ten Commandments are there. Thou shalt not kill. How they can go on killing? The Bible says thou shalt not kill. Well, now that they've rewritten the Bible. Now after Prabhupada exposed it, that they're killing and the Bible says not to, now they've, in response to ISKCON's, the Prabhupada's preaching, they've written it, they've changed it, thou shalt not murder. But that didn't help because they're murdering the cow. Whether you say they're killing her or murdering him, it's the same. They're murdering the cows. Mercilessly murdering their mother. You see, when she stops giving milk. And they think they're saved. The bottom line is, you know, that as long as you're addicted to eating blood and flesh, you would never be happy in the kingdom of God anyway. Because no one eats blood and flesh there. You think someone who has a taste for blood and flesh would be happy in the kingdom of God? No. They don't fit into that atmosphere. If you want to enter, you want to enter the spiritual world, then you have to live like a Vaikunthavasi in this world. You have to live like a Vaikunthavasi. Free from illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. You have to live free from those sinful activities. You have to lose the taste for those things. Otherwise, there's no question of entering Vaikuntha. Just one quick one, and then that's it. We're going way over time. What is it?
Even the cover of some bottles is calfskin.
What did she say?
Even the cover of some bottles is made of leather.
Calfskin.
Calfskin on Bibles.
Calfskin Bibles.
On the
other
side, the cover.
Oh, just see the rascals. Calculus. Thank you, Srila Prabhupada, for saving us from this nightmare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.